This is Sleep Better Tonight, written by Dr. Eleanor Huang, read for you by Nadia Hayes. Introduction. The first time I saw what bad sleep does to a person up close, I was 26 and finishing a reset rotation at a sleep lab in Boston. A man named Howard had checked in for an overnight study. He was 51, a hospital administrator, married, 2 kids. He'd been told he snored, but that wasn't why he came. He came because his wife had pulled him aside one Sunday morning and said, calmly, that she didn't recognize him anymore. He was angry all the time. He couldn't remember conversations. He had started nodding off during board meetings. He cried in the car once for no reason he could name, and then drove the rest of the way home like nothing had happened. I ripped the electrodes to his scalp that night. I watched him sleep. Or rather, I watched him try to sleep. Every minute or two, his airway would collapse. His chest would heave against it. His blood oxygen would tumble. His brain, sensing the suffocation, would jolt him awake just enough to gulp air. He never noticed any of it. He thought he had slept 8 hours. He had, in a sense. He had also stopped breathing 412 times. We diagnosed him with severe obstructive sleep apnea. He started using a CPAP machine. 2 months later, he sent the lab a card. He wrote that he had taken his kids to a baseball game and stayed awake for the whole thing, including the drive home, and he had laughed at a joke his daughter made about the mascot. And afterward, he sat in the parking lot for a minute and realized he hadn't laughed at anything she'd said in 2 years. I have thought about Howard's card a lot in the 20-some years since. It is, in compressed form, the reason I do what I do. Sleep is not a luxury. Sleep is not optional. Sleep is the substrate that everything else in a human life sits on top of: your mood, your judgment, your immune system, your hormones, your relationships, your ability to remember why you walked into a room. And when sleep goes wrong, the damage doesn't always look like sleep damage. It looks like a marriage falling apart. It looks like a promotion you didn't get. It looks like a fender bender on the way home. It looks like a parent who can't remember the punchline of his own kid's joke. I am a sleep medicine physician. I spent the first decade of my career in academic research, mostly studying how the circadian system interacts with metabolism. I left academia in my late 30s, and now I see patients in a clinical practice in a mid-sized American city. I have, by my best estimate, talked to about 9,000 people about their sleep. I have watched what works for them and what doesn't. I have seen the same questions come up over and over, and I have also watched with some dismay the explosion of sleep advice on the internet. Most of it well-meaning, much of it wrong, some of it actively harmful. I wrote this book because I got tired of telling people the same things one at a time. I wrote it because the gap between what sleep science actually knows and what most people have been told about sleep has gotten embarrassingly wide. I wrote it because there's a real cost to not knowing this stuff, and the cost is being paid every day by people who think they're just bad sleepers, or just stressed, or just getting old, when in fact they are dealing with treatable, knowable, fixable problems. A few things about this book before we go further. First, this is not a wellness book. I'm not going to sell you a $400 mattress topper or a special light bulb or a supplement stack. I'm not going to tell you that sleep is a mindset you can manifest. I'm not going to talk about anything in mystical terms. Sleep is a biological process that happens in your brain and body. And like all biological processes, it has rules. The rules are not always intuitive and they're not always convenient, but they are real. And once you understand them, you have a much better shot at working with them instead of against them. Second, this book is grounded in research, but I tried not to make it a textbook. I cite studies when it matters. I leave out the citations when they would slow you down, where the science is genuinely uncertain, and there's more of that than people realize. I say so. Where the science is solid, I say so too, and I try not to hedge unnecessarily. If you want to dig deeper into the literature on any specific topic, the appendices point you to good starting places. Third, I use patient stories throughout. Every one of them is a composite. The names are invented, the details are blurred or shuffled.